Thanks a million, Eileen.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. It's Friday. Hope you're good. We have a great show to take you into the weekend. Let us know what you're up to. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And just listen to the news there and thinking of everybody, all the employees and family working with Twitter. And it's an awful situation to be in. And our heart goes out to y'all. And if we hear anything over the next hour, everybody's waiting for an email. We will let you know. But yes, I was reading a lovely piece this morning in the Indo about actress Charlene McKenna, who, of course, starred in Peaky Blinders and Ripper Street, loads of stuff. She's brilliant. And she was talking about what she's up to at the moment and the fact that she's moved back from living away in New York and London, where she spent most of her time. And she's settled back in her native Monaghan with her American husband. And she was describing life as idyllic and that it was definitely a bit of a culture shock more for him. And she was saying that her American husband can not get his head around the unannounced visitors that turn up at their back door. And it's such an Irish thing, isn't it? And I definitely think more of a country thing. Mind you, we were chatting and one of the lads here was saying that his dad is a real demon for turning up outside his flat on a Sunday morning and just ringing when he's outside the door. How are you? I'm here. Like, Sunday mornings, they're sacred. And a good friend of mine, she lives in the country and has always been surrounded by her family. And her husband is still getting used to the fact that he could come down in his jocks in the morning, put the kettle on, and his mother-in-law is there and she could be watching TV or wiping down the counters. And that is just the way it is. But I thought it was funny. Adam Rothenberg is Charlene's husband. He was also saying the Irish goodbye. He found that wildly interesting too, because it takes 45 minutes. People put their coat on and they've said goodbye and 45 minutes, they're still there. You can't get them out the door. So let me know. Maybe you're a city slicker who's moved to the countryside. Have you embraced the traits with open arms? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Or maybe, I don't know, myself and himself, I'd get a bit jumpy. The doorbell rings and, you know, you're not expecting anybody and all of a sudden you look like it's Freddy Krueger at the door. What's going on? Love to know your thoughts on that. The BBC have a piece online today about people's voices and their accents. There was a survey done across workplaces which revealed almost half of UK workers have had their accents criticised or mocked, and over a third felt they admitted to feeling self-conscious about the way they spoke. I just thought that was kind of sad, isn't it? Because our accents really are what make us unique and we should be wearing it with a badge of honour. Like Charlene McKenna, really good Monaghan accent. I'm thinking Dolores O'Riordan with the Cranberries, you know, Paolo Nutini, his Scottish lilt when it comes through, you're listening to him. And then I suppose on the other hand, you've got Irish teenagers online who are constantly being criticised for kind of sounding all American, aren't they? So we want to celebrate accents today. We want to know, what is your favourite Irish accent? Or maybe what's the sexiest Irish accent? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I'd say my favourite is the Wexford accent. I love a Wexford accent. I think a proper Wexford accent can sound like somebody is singing. So like that. Sexiest accent, Cork, maybe. Love a Cork accent. Yeah, like a Cork accent. Bono is in the news today. You heard he has got a new book out and we're seeing and hearing a lot of him these days. He swung by The Late Show with Stephen Colbert last night to talk about his new memoir, and even treated the audience to a solo performance of the Joshua Tree track, With or Without You. And I thought this was kind of nice. Here he is setting the mood for the song and life in Bray at the time.
The walls of the Martello Tower were made of granite and 7 foot thick. It was a fort containing 3 circular rooms, 2 bathrooms, and a kitchen built into the walls. The living room was like a granite igloo with an opening onto a solid stone winding staircase leading to the lookout that we slept in, where we built a glass room that looked over the promenade of the seaside town of Bray. I guess you could say we lived in a lighthouse. Through the storm, we reached the shore. Give it all, but I want more. I'm greedy for you. With or without you, we love.
of different, isn't it? But such a classic song. I thought that was good. And speaking of oldies but goodies, the Official Charts Company have created a list featuring the most streamed songs of each year. So some of the songs that you would have imagined being massive the year they were released actually weren't. And it took them a while to gain the recognition. But thanks to streaming, they now have, like this one. Don't stop believing. Yep, after 41 years of not stopping believing, Journey's 1981 hit has finally been revealed as the most streamed song of that year. And at the time, it only reached number 62 in the charts. Here Comes the Sun from the Beatles' 1969 album Abbey Road. That was never even released as a single. Here comes the sun. Yeah, I love that one. It's good, isn't it? And it's actually the only Beatles song to make it onto the list of most streamed songs. And then, of course, there's Mr. Bryan Adams. Standing on your mama's porch. You told me that it lasts forever. Oh, yeah, my hand. I knew that it was now. Yeah, the summer of 69, which, of course, everybody knows. That only, at the time, got to number 42. When it was released in 1985. It's now the most streamed song of that year. And Mr. Ray Charles, who I love, I Got a Woman, that went relatively unnoticed at the time. 1954 it was released and only recently has found the love it deserves. I'm up for a bit of Ray Charles, are you? Yeah. Let's do a bit of Ray. Love a bit of Ray Charles. Absolutely amazing. Lots of you talking about accents. You're getting hot under the collar, lads. Catherine, it has to be the Cork accent. Nothing like it to make you feel at home. I really fancy the Scottish accent, says somebody else. David in Limerick. I have to say the Louth accent is very attractive. The Cork accent for me, absolutely love it too. Always reminds me of my childhood when I spent 3 months every summer there. Such a magical accent. How are you, Catherine? I agree with you. On most things, but definitely not the Wexford accent. It's boring. Thumbs up for the Cork accent. It's cool, it's dramatic, and has loads of energy, says Kieran in Glasnevin. I thought that was going to say Kieran in Cork. The unannounced visit is so country. We have an uncle who arrives with no warning and we love it because he always brings chips. There you go. All right, keep them coming in. 51551. But first, let me tell you about this. Yes, as always, it is our quiz, Reeling in the Years, and we've gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we are having two people on air after 4 o'clock. We're going to ask them three questions each. You know how it works at this stage. You could win a 2-night stay for two adults at Fota Island Resort with breakfast each morning and dinner in the Amber Lounge on an evening of your choice. You can experience great facilities at the resort, including walking trails, an indoor swimming pool, at the spa, all of that lovely stuff. The website is photaisland.ie to find out more information. But the question to play today is, Donald Trump has strongly hinted that he will run for what job in 2024? So you can give us a call, 0818 715 925 to be in with a chance to win that prize at Fota. The number again, 0818 715 925. Good luck and back after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Keep your texts coming in to 51551. OK, we're joined now by 4-time Paralympian and gold medal winner Ellen Keane. She's just launched a new podcast exploring the world of disability. It is lovely to see you, my dear. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm really good. So congrats on the podcast.
Thank you.
How are you feeling now that it's out in the ether?
A little bit stressed, if I'm honest, because it's one of those things, like, I'm a swimmer, I'm an athlete, that's what I do, and I'm so used to doing it and I'm so confident doing it. And I guess it's the same with Dancing with the Stars. When I tried something new, it's just like, oh, this is something new and
slightly
different.
Out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, so now this is another opportunity to put something new out there and people to kind of see me in a new light. And it's more because I'm so used to being interviewed myself, and now it's my chance to kind of interview other people and kind of get their stories.
Sure.
So that's a whole new realm in itself. So I am anxious every like Wednesday night, could they come out on Thursday night or
yep.
Thursdays? And I am a little bit stressed the Wednesday night, being like, oh God, I can't remember what I said. But then by the time Thursday comes, I'm like relaxed and chilled and ready
and
for the next
one.
Yeah, and really proud. Yeah.
Has it been on the cards for a while? Is this something that you've been thinking about doing, or?
Yeah, because I guess because of the spotlight I kind of have with my sport and I get interviewed a lot and everyone kind of knows my story, I have always wanted to give back and I've always kind of wanted other people to have their story shared. Because I am disabled, but I don't speak for all people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. I'm not a wheelchair user. I don't know what it's like to be blind. I only kind of know from the people I surround myself with. So I kind of wanted their voices to be heard and their experiences to be told. So I guess the podcast, I wanted to do it for so long, but the timing just wasn't right. And if I was going to do it, I wanted it to be really, really well produced. I wanted there to be artwork. I wanted to be able to get really good quality guests. Mm. And then Allianz came on board as my sponsors for the podcast. So now I'm able to do all that. So we're getting the stories out there and they're really good quality. So I'm hoping we're going to get a really good listenership.
And I get the impression from you, like, I loved watching with you and Dancing with the Stars and seeing you compete. Like, you do everything to a very high level. So this was going to be no different.
Yeah, I think that was another reason why I didn't do it for so long. Because I was like, I can't do it if it's not going to be great.
I love the title, the D word.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's a bit cheeky.
Yeah. That was the idea. Yeah. I wanted to catch people's attention because I kind of feel like the word disability in itself can be a little bit dusty and it can be not attractive. Like, a lot of people wouldn't tend to lean into that. So when it's something a bit cheeky like that, it kind of lets the mind wander. And and disability as well is sometimes seen as a dirty word. So I kind of wanted to take ownership of it and kind of put it out there and give people a bit of a laugh with it as well. Because that's like, we're all human at the end of the day. Stuff happens. People become disabled and we're not miserable. We don't sit around being miserable all day. We're quite funny. We can laugh at it.
Yes.
And that's kind of what the podcast is about.
And I got that from the opening, like literally your opening sentence. The first one you did was with James Scully, who's obviously a Paralympic swimmer. He's a mate of yours as well.
Yeah.
And you opened the podcast by saying, like, we have to just put this out there. James, do you use the word disabled? Do you call yourself disabled? Or do you live with a disability? And I think so many of us able-bodied people, and I hate that phrase.
I know, it's such a weird phrase.
I hate it. I'm like, when I hear myself say it, I'm like, oh. But I think, you know, terminology is important because it can trigger people in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
So what might be offensive to one person is not necessarily offensive to another.
Exactly, yeah. And some people do identify as disabled and some people don't. So it's always important for me to kind of like ask that question in the beginning.
Okay.
For me, I do identify as being disabled because for so long, I've been told I haven't been disabled. I'm not disabled enough.
And sorry, I'm going to interrupt you there. For people who maybe have been living under a rock, just tell us, what is your disability?
So I was born without my left arm from below the elbow. So I've lived my whole life with one hand. But because of that, I'm quite mobile. I'm able to do a lot of things. And because I'm an athlete as well, I'm quite strong. So I am really mobile and strong. On the scale of disability, I'm always told I'm not disabled enough. I'm always, and then I'm not able-bodied enough. And I've always kind of felt a little bit lost and in the middle of it. So it's important for me to own that word. And I used to be ashamed of my disability as well because I didn't know where I belonged. So now for me, it's about owning it. It's about using the word so that other people can get more confident and comfortable using that word too. It's about kind of taking the power back of
taking
the word.
Taking the power. And you said there that you own your disability. But at a time when you were younger, you didn't, and you were very insecure.
Yeah.
And I think I remember reading an interview where you said that you felt unworthy of love.
Yeah.
So that's a very strong statement. So try and kind of talk us through that, because what age are you now?
I'm 27.
27.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know you, you're assured, you're out there, you're such a role model. But where did you get that strength from, and where did you feel, and when did you feel ready to kind of accept your disability?
I guess it was through sport and being comfortable in sport and getting lost in sport that I knew what happiness felt like. I knew who my true self was. Because when I was in the pool, I was so happy, I was so carefree. I didn't hide, I couldn't hide. And my friends around me were just, they didn't care. It was never a topic of conversation, my arm, or I never felt like they were judging me because of my arm or any of that. So I knew what it felt like to be accepted and to feel loved. But when I was outside of the pool, I was just so afraid. I was so afraid of judgment. I was so afraid of being left out or being stared at. So that's when I hid my arm. And I did that for, I started, I guess, doing that when I was maybe 12 or 13. And then I didn't stop it until I was 19 when I started college. And that was only because it was like a fresh start and a new beginning. And I was like, right, do you know when you, my best way of describing it is, do you know when you walk in a room and you see someone you know, but you don't say hi to them straight away, and then you don't say hi, and then it's this big thing that you can't say hi.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I felt about my arm. I was like, I kind of need to show it off straight away, because if I don't show it off straight away and then people see it, it's the kind of reaction and surprise that people have when they finally notice. And that's kind of what I dreaded, and that's what I hated. So it actually took me to going to college and having a fresh start that I felt brave enough to do it. But it was really in sport that I was like, I can be happy. I just need to figure out how to do it. And I went to boarding school after my junior cert for 2 years. And I was there with a girl called Lauren Steadman, who actually was on the Strictly a few years ago. Okay. And she's a Paralympian and she has one arm. And she was just so carefree. She was just so confident. She didn't care. She was just so glamorous and all of this. And I just wanted to be exactly like her. So I guess it took me a long time to get there, but I guess now that I'm here, that's why I'm so...
I feel that you have that responsibility now to be that role
model.
Yeah,
because she was that for me. And it's so weird because I've kind of like nearly followed the same path as her in terms of doing Dance with the Stars. But yeah, it was kind of having someone like her that gave me the belief that I can be accepted. So that's why when I'm out there now, I flaunt my arm, I show it off, I'm not afraid of talking about it.
And because, we saw that on Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. And you must have had a huge reaction from viewers, going to the shop, you know, going to get your groceries, on social media, from not just people who have a disability, but also from parents, I'd imagine, as well, of young girls and boys who saw you. And because it's not often we see people with a disability out there on TV, and the media has a big role to play, I think, in that as well.
Definitely. So when I was kind of growing up, I was never bullied because of my arm, but I think a lot of kids would ask questions and a lot of kids would stare a lot, and even adults and stuff would stare a lot. And now kids don't see it. Like, they don't see my arm. They're so used to my arm and my disability now that it's not a topic of conversation. So even like if I meet a kid, they'll ask me all about dancing first, and then maybe somewhere down the line, the more they're with me, they'll ask, oh, how do you do this with one hand? It's not the first thing they think of. But that's because of the media, that's because of exposure and representation. And the more different type of bodies we get out there, the more accustomed all of us are going to get to them, and the less surprised we're going to be when we see them.
And I think that's, there was a conversation you had with James in the podcast as well, because I think as adults we kind of can tend to be uneasy and be and you know, get all uncomfortable. But children are just going to be children, and they stare, and they, you know, they do their things. And you asked James in this conversation, like, how are you with kids? And you both had a very different take on children. You know, he was able to be, he was okay with
us. He's so chill.
He had a very funny story about a child looking at him in a changing room.
Yeah.
And James, he's of short stature.
Yeah.
Is that what
so
I say?
his the bones in his legs would be affected. So he would have a short stature. I think he's like 4'5", maybe. I could be wrong. He's
gonna so this kid said to the dad in the changing room, why is he so short?
Yeah.
And which he found funny. But you're, again, and it was just so interesting to hear your reaction, that you used to find it uncomfortable when kids.
Oh, I still kind of would.
Do you? Okay.
More because, like, I'm so aware of small minds and how small minds can cling on to things.
Yes.
So it's more like, because when I was a kid, my mom would have said, oh, God made you that way. And religion, and there's just so many different religions out there now, a lot of people don't even believe, so it's not something you can just say to a random child. So when someone asks me, oh, like when a kid asks me, oh, what happened to you, I'm just like, oh, I was just born this way, like the way you have blonde hair or the way you have brown hair. But like, I would still a little bit panic and be like, stop asking me the question, I don't want to scar you.
So you still get the fear a little bit?
A little bit, because you're just afraid that you might say the wrong thing and it might stay with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've travelled a lot competing, obviously. How do you think in Ireland we fare up in terms of dealing with disabilities?
I think we're great. I think we're really, really good at just accepting and moving on. And like, Irish people will just ask if you want help, and you'll say no, and then straight away they'll be like, grant, moving on, and they move on straight away. Whereas other countries, the actual main reason I started to notice I was different was because I went on holiday to the States when I was just after finishing sixth class, and I was in Kmart or something in the toilet in Florida, and I couldn't figure out how to turn the tap on because you kind of needed two hands to turn the tap on. And then this woman came out of the toilet and was like, "Oh, don't worry, we get that all the time with shark attacks." And I was like 12 and I was like, what?
Oh my God.
And it was kind of like in that moment that I was like, oh, my arm is a thing. And then I started to feel, oh, why are they staring at me? Are they thinking I was in a shark attack? Are they thinking all these things? Yeah.
Wow.
So that's kind of where it started.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas here, people are more accepting
of
it.
Yeah, they don't even ask questions. And sometimes if they just ask questions, like with Scully, like we've had so many random interactions with people. And sometimes they're like, well, do you know what? You're better off not dead. And we're like, yeah. No, we're better off not dead. That's okay.
Wowzers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the whole point of the podcast, though, to be able to tell these stories. And maybe even like, because some people say, like I was afraid of kids coming up to me, I might say the wrong thing. Like that's the same thing with adults and people dealing with disability. If they're not exposed enough to it, they might know the right thing to say. And I guess that's the whole point of the podcast, to break up kind of the elephant in the room.
Exactly. And you do it with such humour as well, which I love.
Yeah.
The Paralympics got a lot of coverage on mainstream media. That's important, isn't it? It's important that we keep that going.
Yeah.
And as you said as well in an interview, it's not just Paralympians. You know, when you finish training and when you finish with your sport, you are going to be a disabled person.
Yeah, yeah.
Not an athlete.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of the thing as well. Like my first two guests are by chance Paralympians, but I tried really hard not to get athletes all the time. So they're the only two athletes I currently have. And I have people from all walks of life. But it's because in the media, the kind of only disabled bodies we're used to seeing are Paralympians, because you see them at the games and then they get invited on shows like Strictly or Dance with the Stars, and that's great, but we need to see regular disabled bodies in ads, on TV, representation. And it's kind of like, imagine if all you saw on TV were Olympians or models, like that would really mess with your self-esteem and your image, and you wouldn't know what's right. So that's why we need to try and get more different and diverse bodies out there.
Absolutely. Where do you get the time? Because you are training 4 or 5 hours a day. What you had to put in on Dancing with the Stars is just so full on.
Yeah.
Then to have the time to do this podcast and put the time and effort into it, like, it's a lot. And also then, I suppose, taking on that mantle of a role model, which you do so well for so many. So there's a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah, there are a lot of balls. But I think the main thing I have to focus on is my training at the end of the day, because that's the reason I'm in the position I'm in. And then I have my sports agent, Sinead Galvin, who literally wouldn't be able to do any of this without her, and she's like my best friend, but she knows how my brain works now. So if, like, I'm so bad at admin, I'm so bad at getting back to people, because I just look at my phone and I'm like, oh, I'll go training, and then I'll forget that there's a message there. Whereas Sinead is the one in the background,
like my sister.
Sinead's the one in the background trying to manage it all, and I just have to kind of turn up. So I literally would be lost without her. But it's like, these things are important, and I am going to retire one day, and I need to have more than just swimming.
And it's a great legacy to leave.
Yeah.
You know, a podcast like this, which opens conversations, not, as I said, not just for kids, but for parents.
Yeah.
And for all of us who need to be educated, I think, as well, and don't really know where to start. So I think it's great. If you could have anybody on your podcast as a guest, who would it be?
I always get asked this question, and I kind of forget that I'm trying to plan ahead. But recently, because Lewis Capaldi came out with his Tourette's diagnosis, he'd be quite interesting to have on, because like, he's lived his whole life without knowing, and now he knows. And Tourette's is a disability. It's one of those things. So it would be really interesting to have a conversation with him about how he feels about the diagnosis, and would he identify as disabled now, or just things like that. Like, he,
amazing,
without even meaning to, he's become such a role model now for loads of people with Tourette's, and they can look up to him and see, oh, look at him, he's a superstar, and it's absolutely not holding him back.
Absolutely. Dancing with the Stars is back very soon. Are you going to be like lying back on the couch with a bag of crisps going, oh, thank God, or are you going to miss it?
I'm going to be so jealous.
Are you?
I'm literally going to feel like Stephen's cheating on me. I'm not going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for everyone else but him, so he has to stop dancing with her.
You'll be scorned, crying, eating your ice cream.
Exactly.
He's left me.
No. I'll be his number one fan. I can't wait. I'm going to be in the audience like every weekend. They're going to be like, why is Alan still here? Get her out of here. She's not supposed to be here anymore.
Any advice for people taking part in the show?
Oh my God. I guess make sure you get enough sleep. Like, I look back on it and I'm like, I could have done so much better if I had more rest. But then at the end of the day, it's just so hectic that you just kind of have to go with it. Embrace it. Try not to organize too many things during the week other than dancing, because you're not going to be able to do them. Just
fully
embrace the experience of Dancing with the Stars, because it's not going to last.
Yeah. And your focus at the minute is obviously sport, and World Championships are in August.
Yes.
Are you there? Are you winning?
Yeah, well, that's the plan. I've never been world champion, so I'd like to try and become world champion before I retire. And it's also the first chance to qualify for Paris in 2024. So
Amazing. That's
what I'm focusing on at the moment, and I'm loving it. I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm finding the balance really well at the moment.
Good for you.
Talk to me in a month.
Say that. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad I found you in a balanced state.
Yeah.
It's lovely to chat to you.
Thank you for
lovely
having
to chat
me.
To you. I know you're heading off to the pool now, so go and enjoy. The new podcast again is The D Word. It's out now with Allianz, and it is a really, really good educational, fun listen. So well done you. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So I was chatting to Ellen Keane there before the break, and lots of love coming in for her, and rightly so. She's just incredible. One listener says, she's just so positive. I love hearing her. As someone who grew up with a disability in the 80s, it's nice to see how far we've come and to see someone else who looks like me on telly. Here. Damien also said, hey, Catherine, I lost my eyesight a few years ago. I don't use the word disabled, however. I just refer to myself as being blind. That's my preferred way of saying it. And I think that's what I really got from the podcast and from what she was saying, that, you know, different people like different things, and trigger, and different terminology can trigger people in different ways. So it is very individual. Gabriel said, I feel the same as Ellen. It's great to hear you on the radio, Ellen. I think we need to be more open with our disabilities. Yes, people can see us from the outside, but they don't know us from the inside. Una said, Catherine, lovely to hear Ellen. I would love to see more of her on the telly. She has such a natural sparkle about her. Do you know what, Una? That is the word. It's sparkle. That's what she does. She sparkles. Good luck to her in the World Championships. It's very refreshing to hear her chatting so openly about her disability. She's making this a more open society, and she's a good role model for the next generation. So lots of love coming in there. And she's gone off to train in the pool. Lots of love coming in. Lots of stuff on accents as well. The top accent is the Donegal accent for me, says one. Pauline and Leash says, I hate the Cork accent. The Donegal accent is really the nicest. Oh my God, we've started war here. Anyway, keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Well, I'm delighted to say we have live music in studio today, which we love on a Friday. Well, we love every day of the week. We're joined by musician Niamh Dunn, and she's accompanied by Sean today. They're here to celebrate Niamh's solo album, Tides. And many of you will know Niamh from the trad band Bioga, who of course collaborated with Ed Sheeran a couple of years ago. Good to see you guys. Niamh, how you doing?
I'm great, Catherine. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Sean, you're good?
I'm good.
Looking forward to the weekend?
Chris, yeah.
Good. So listen, huge congrats. Tides is your second solo album, but your first made up of entirely your own songs. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. So this is my first time having a punt at the songwriting. So
good stuff.
This is the fruits of the labour.
And how long was it in the making?
I was writing for about 2 years, I think, in total. And then maybe a year of trying to grab little spaces in the studio and get it done. I took my time.
Do you know, sometimes the best things take time as and especially because Bioga is so big, and I suppose the band, we'll talk all about that, but when you've got that camaraderie on the stage and you've got people to bounce with, but when you're putting yourself out there as a solo musician. It's a different story altogether.
It is. And I think, you know, I had to kind of dig deep for the courage to do it. But it's been really rewarding. I'm really glad I did it. And it's kind of, it's there now. And it's you know, it's out of your control once it's out
once
there.
It's
you
out
just
there.
Hope that people like it.
OK, well, yeah. What are you going to start us off with today?
I'm going to do a song called Did You Ever Love Me?
Take it away.
Hold your ground, girl, what else can you do? Keep him warm now, do whatever he might ask you to do. Stop all the clocks, I'll make you a son. Hide me away, love, so no one will know what I've done. Cast aside now, I've nothing at all. Ain't that funny? They say how I'm one of. Trembling bell, echo low. Memory of flesh now, I feel it deep in my bones. Make myself small, so petite and so pretty. I'll prove myself wrong, but I'm weak of belief.
Beautiful. Oh my goodness, that was gorgeous. And I love the fact you just gave Sean a lovely wink there at the
Isn't
end.
Isn't he brilliant?
He's brilliant. And I should say that he is your husband,
is
as well
husband.
As your producer and
yes.
You guys. How is it working together?
It's great, Sean Ogus.
Perfect. Any argument.
Sean Ogus is also a founding member of Bioga, so we have been working together in music for many, many years. And
so are ye childhood sweethearts?
You could say that. We were young in our early 20s when we kind of got together, and we got married about very bad 4 or 5 years, 6 years ago.
Six.
Yeah, 6 years ago. yeah, we wouldn't be great with keeping track of the dates.
A bit like myself as well.
Yeah, we do have to kind of make sure we're going out now tonight and we're not going to talk about work and put a ban on Bioga and put a ban on music.
Oh, really? So date nights, there's no music is not allowed to be mentioned.
And then, you know, you last a glass of wine in and then you're straight back into it anyway.
But this is what it should sound like. That's interesting. It's an interesting partnership, I'd imagine. And so when you go to studio together, like obviously you know each other so well, it's massively important. Trust is a big thing. So I suppose you're never going to trust anybody like you trust your partner, your family. And that's important.
It is, especially in terms of songs, I think.
Yeah.
I think singing and telling stories through singing is such a vulnerable thing for any singer or artist or musician, you know. And I do really trust Sean Og. I'm really lucky to have him as well. He's one of the finest guitar players and producers in the country. And we have the studio at the back of the house and, you know, we're in and out there.
So do you get special treatment or does she have to wait in line when everybody else is coming in or out?
Just wait in line like everybody else.
That's true, actually.
You're a great storyteller and I love listening to musicians and singers like you who, like, the story just comes through and that's what you do.
Great
thanks, song. And there is an interesting story in it. So
I kind of started delving into mythology in a big way in the last few years, kind of inspired by John Spillane, and he's really into that sort of way of
love, John.
Thinking. Yeah, he's great, isn't he? He's a gift. John is a gift.
He really is.
And even Mancan O'Mangan, there seems to be this kind of appetite at the moment for people kind of exploring mythology. So it's about the goddess Boen, who became the River Boyne, and she had an affair with Dagda, who stopped the world for 9 months so that nobody would know that they'd had this illicit affair and that this child was born out of this affair. And
wow.
She essentially was punished for her ill deeds and washed away by and became the River Boyne. And for me, it just was like a gut punch. It's just kind of had all these sort of mirrors of how we treated women in this country for so many years, through the state and through the Catholic Church, in laundries, and hide them away and shamed and vilified and punished essentially for nothing. It just kind of, I thought it was kind of fascinated by how it had a modern context.
And is the album like, because you describe it as an album of two halves. So is it, would you say it's quite traditional in one way and quite modern in another? Or when you say it's an album of two halves?
I think so. The way they kind of fell was the first half is kind of story songs, kind of inspired by traditional Irish music, and to be kind of chord progressions and themes that would be, you know, borrowing from that tradition which I grew up with. And then the second half is more kind of contemporary singer-songwriter style, like that one that you just heard. Folky still.
Folky, in its,
yeah.
But music was a part of your life. And we were chatting during the break there because I did a documentary. We were trying to figure out how many years ago it was, a radio documentary with your dad.
Yes.
The famous, the beautiful Mickey Dunne.
Yeah.
And
he
the most incredible.
Loved you.
I loved him, the most incredible piper.
Yeah.
And he brought me out to the back of he has a where he makes the pipes out the back of the house.
Yeah.
And again, just watching an artist,
I mean,
in action.
He's an incredible musician, but I mean he's a genius with his hands. He's a genius craftsman, you know. So he's been a pipe maker now for many, many years, and just it never ceases to amaze me.
And again, incredible stories of music from the travelling community, and he sort of broke the mould, didn't he, in terms of everybody else were the stringed instruments,
all fiddle players
and he went the pipes route.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny, you know,
you must be proud of your traveller heritage.
Oh, I am.
Yeah.
And it's very much informs my music, you know.
Yeah.
I always kind of point out that I don't have the lived experience of being a traveller, but the culture and the music and sort of the wildness of that music is very much part of my approach and the music that I play, and I'm very proud of it, and it's very important.
And so important that it was documented in the way that it was, as in through song, because it's kept so many of those stories alive and so much of the mythology alive as well.
Yeah, and I think for singers again, you know, I mean, John Reilly, you know, I think Christy Moore got a lot of his songs, I should say, from him. So the Travellers are very important in terms of tradition bearing and legacy and passing it on. And it's important that we acknowledge that, I think.
So tell me, what is, if there was one thing that people could take away from the album, what would you like it to be?
I hope that people can connect with the songs and with the themes of family and themes of feminism and themes of mythology, because the songs were written to connect with people and to tell stories. So I hope people connect with the stories, I guess. Yeah.
That'll be the take home.
Yeah.
Bioga are still going strong, and we were chatting just before you started singing there about I suppose the difference between being part of a band like Bioga and the experience of touring and then doing your solo stuff. Was it an itch that you needed to scratch?
Yeah, I think it was, whether I knew it or not. I mean, I think you'll be hard pushed to find any musician in the country that didn't have to rethink things over the pandemic, you know, when the rug was kind of pulled out from us, under us all, really. So I hated the pandemic. I'm an extrovert and I get my energy from other people, but it did create space for me to start writing, and Sean Ogg was massively encouraging. Would you just go and do it and stop talking about it? So and also John Spillane was a big mentor to me and encouraged me to just do it.
To do it,
to
get
start.
Out there.
So
I have to talk about Ed Sheeran. Whenever anybody mentions Ed Sheeran, you go, "Oh, enough already of Ed," because you
not at all.
Are you great? Because you are the Galway girl.
Oh, you can't say that to a Limerick
even though you're from Limerick, living in Antrim. But you were, and I mean, you were together in studio, and he wrote that song when you were there, right?
Yeah, we were all over in England, and a beautiful sunny day, and we sat under this big gorgeous tree, and we started writing, and it was kind of bizarre and wonderful all at the same time. Johnny McDade was there. Foy Vance was there, Amy Wadge, and we just got into the buzz of playing music together, and it's the rest is history, I suppose. And of course, we had a great time.
You played with him in Glastonbury, yes. And then you toured obviously with the big stadium tour here in 2018. Yeah. Are you still mates with him?
We're still mates with him, and we'd
and
stay
Sean,
in
I
touch.
Have to ask you, by the way, how did it feel to be for your wife to be the subject of of Ed Sheeran's love song?
Yeah, it was a bit strange seeing her face plastered all over the front page of The Independent.
I'd say.
We were on honeymoon.
Is this the Gold Girl, I think was the headline or something like that.
We were on our honeymoon at the time.
That's right, yeah, we were in Brazil.
We woke up in the morning and it's like, I'm on the front of the paper.
There you are, there I am now, there I am. And have you kept in touch with me? He seems pretty sound.
Do you know what? We're good pals. Good. We are, and we stay in touch, and he's his gorgeous wife and his mum and dad. Like, we usually end up going for drinks with his father. His father loves the pint, and so we'd be great pals with them as well. So we're good mates, and wish I think he's fantastic, and nobody works harder than Ed, so we love him.
Brilliant. Yep. All right, listen, what are you going to play? We have time for another song, I think, don't we? Yes, we do.
Great.
What are you going to play for us?
So I'm going to do Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Fab. So I was born and reared on her. I loved her as a teenager.
Alanis Morissette,
So we'll give that one a go.
Off you go.
Thanks, Catherine.
Just yet, I've got one hand in my pocket.
Wow, absolutely stunning. A lot of love coming in for that one. Texture. That was really nice. The gang and Tralee listening here and all singing along.
Yay, great.
Yeah, amazing. That was Niamh Dunn, Sean O'Graham accompanying there. Lads, that was wonderful. Great to see
and
you.
And we're live in Dolan's on the 26th of November.
26th of
and
November.
And we want everybody to come, so I just thought I better get that in.
Fab. Yeah, and the album again is called Tides. It's out now.
Thank you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurmagath Cóch, the battle of the accents is still happening here. I adore the Aussie accent. Spent 2 years there in my 20s and it brings back fond memories for me. Would love to go back. For me, the sexiest Irish accent is the Ulster one. Just think of Liam Neeson saying anything. Or Jamie Dornan, 50 Shades of Swoon. Carmen said, my son Catherine has lived in the UK for the last 20 years. He had a dental appointment this morning in London. He told me when he checked in at the reception desk, the receptionist's eyes lit up when she heard him speak. It turned out she was from Dublin and only in London 8 weeks. Oh, OK, she just recognised the Irish accent. I thought she fancied it. Feeling homesick, I'm glad he hung on to his Irish accent. That comes in from Carmel. My favourite accent is either Donegal or rural Derry, says Mona. Rural Derry, as opposed to... OK. Nobody has mentioned Cavan or Leitrim. But those accents have a lovely lilt to them as well. Lots more coming in. But now it is time for this... Yes, we are getting ready to reel in the years. We have two players who are going to battle it out for a fantastic prize. We have gathered songs, news reports, TV shows and movies from over the years and decades. And that will be our competition today. What are they playing for? Two nights for two adults at Photo Island Resort with breakfast each morning and dinner in the Amber Lounge on an evening of choice. Lots of great facilities down there. The indoor pool, the spa, the exclusive Cove restaurant as well. And of course, you've got Photo Wildlife Park, Photo House and Gardens and the world-class English Market Ballymaloe's wonderful gardens and shops down there as well. Loads going on. So photoisland.ie is the website. And one of these lucky people is going to win that prize today. Orla Kirby is calling from County Meath and Martin Horrigan is in Nina Tipperary. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Catherine.
Orla, I'm going to start with you. You're player number one. What are you up to today?
I am getting ready for my daughter's second birthday party tomorrow.
Oh, very good. Preparations are in full swing.
Yeah, well, pretty much everything's done now at this stage. So she was two on Halloween, so we're having a couple of people around tomorrow just to celebrate.
Ah, lovely. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so are you making cakes or what are you doing?
So I've just finished decorating her cake.
Okay, so you made it and decorated it.
Yes.
Oh, God, put me to shame. Fab. And so you've got the gang coming over. So it's a big day. That's tomorrow, is it?
It is tomorrow, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, enjoy it and have a bit of fun. Can I ask you what your favourite accent is? We've got the ball rolling here.
So my husband is actually from Cork.
Okay.
So I'd have to say the Cork accent, but I would be partial to my Donegal lilt.
Okay. I like a Donegal accent as well.
Mm.
Very good. Okay, Orla, lovely to chat to you this afternoon. Martin in Tipperary, how are you, sir?
Hi, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Like a Tipperary accent, Martin.
A good North Tipperary accent, Catherine, yeah.
What are you up to today?
Just here in Crescent there, just looking a few bucks at paint. We're doing a bit of housework at home, so...
Very good.
So.
And are you working for the weekend? Or are you off, or...?
Yeah, working Sunday, Saturday, so we'll probably go up to the Dublin tomorrow for the rugby.
Oh, very good, very good.
Hopefully, yeah.
All right, well, listen, best of luck to the two of you today. You're playing for a fantastic prize of a weekend away. Do you want to wish each other the best of luck before we start?
Absolutely. Best of luck, Martin.
Best of luck. All the best.
All right, so guys, just so you know, the year that we are talking about is 2006. So, Orla, you're player number one, and how do you feel about that? 2006, is that good for you?
We'll be finding out, won't we?
Find out. All right, here we go. This is your movie question. Are you going to go long or short?
I'll go short.
Go short. 2 points in the bag is what we're trying to get here. This children's film involving a dancing penguin was a huge hit in 2006. Have a listen to this clip and try and name it.
And if you see Pa, tell him I tried.
Okay, what you talking about?
I'm going to stop them taking our fish.
Well, Orla, what do you think?
Happy Feet.
Happy Feet is right. Such a brilliant movie. And of course, with the voices of Robin Williams there as well. So 2 points on the board for you, Martin. We're going to movies in 2006. How are you feeling? Do you want to go long? Play it safe or go short? Go short. All right. This film was the first installment in the James Bond movies involving the actor Daniel Craig. Can you tell us the name of this movie?
May I ask you where it is?
10 million was wired to your account in Montenegro, with a contingency for 5 more if I deem it a prudent investment.
What do you reckon, Martin? Do you know the movie? Need an answer.
Was it Doctor No?
No, unfortunately it wasn't. It was Casino, Casino Royale. That was what we were looking for there. Hard Luck, based on the book by Ian Fleming. It grossed $616 million in the box office. Holy moly. You can watch it tonight now, Martin. Orla, back to you. This is music in 2006. What do you reckon? Long or short clip?
Oh, I'll go short again.
Okay. This song soared to the top of the Irish charts in 2006. Can you name the song or the singer we'll take?
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad.
I don't know the song, but it's Shakira.
Yes, we can take that, can't we? Yes, we can, Shakira. Hips don't lie. That's the one. So another 2 points for you. Okay, Martin, back to you. And this is your music question. What do you reckon? Long?
Long or short?
Short. Okay, straight in with it. This song hit the top of the Irish music charts in 2006. We will take the name of the song or the band, Martin.
If I lay here, if I just...
That was short.
Oh, yeah.
What do you reckon, Martin? The song or the band?
No, Catherine, no, sorry.
No.
That's the clue.
Okay, no bother. Hard luck, Martin. That means that Orla is our winner today because you're not able to catch up. So it was a quick one, but it was a good one for you, Orla. You
Hard
are
luck,
our winner.
Martin.
You are our winner today. Hard luck, Martin. We are going to be...
Congratulations, Orla.
Thank you so much.
Very kind.
No problem.
And Martin, we're going to be sending you out 2 Ray Darcy Show mugs. We will be sending them to you down in Tipperary. So have a lovely weekend and thanks for playing with us today. Orla, you are off to Fota Island Resort for 2 nights. So who are you going to take with you?
Well, I'll have to take my husband. he's from down the road. So, it'll be nice to... It was a nice excuse to visit family. So.
There you go. That's a nice prize to win coming into the weekend, isn't it?
It's fabulous. Absolutely.
So all your efforts now so stay calm tomorrow with all the kids around and all the sugar and everything else that's going to go on, safe in the knowledge that you'll get away for a weekend.
That's it, exactly. And all the kids can go home with their parents tomorrow.
Exactly.
Fill them with sugar and send them home.
Listen, thanks for chatting to us today and
thank
congratulations
so
again.
Much.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, earlier we were talking about songs that have been more successful on streaming sites than when they were originally first released. So we played Journey's Don't Stop Believing. We had The Beatles' Here Comes the Sun, Bryan Adams' Summer of 69. But you've been in touch to tell us more. This was a big hit for you guys. What about this one?
I see a line of cars and they are painted black with flowers and my love hope never to come back.
What a tune. Yes, that's Rolling Stones' classic track, Painted Black. And that was the most streamed song from 1966, despite it not being a massive hit for them back then. And I know I've downloaded it and added it to many playlists. This was another one that struck a chord for you guys.
Oh, baby,
oh, baby, now.
a tune and didn't quite cut the mustard in 1967. That is, of course, Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Martin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And again, the biggest streaming song of that year. Anyway, good classics there, but let's go with a chart stomper of the moment. This is the woman herself. This is Taylor Swift. Yes. that is a wonderful Taylor Swift there. I love that song. Okay, the blonde bombshell will set pulses racing later this month, capturing the glitz, the glamour and the heartwarming moments of Hollywood superstar Marilyn Monroe. The show, which is on at the Helix for one night only, promises to leave audience with the lasting image of Hollywood's most enduring icon, and featuring the best of both Irish and international talent. Director and producer of the show, Ryan Andrews, who of course we know from Fair City. We've been chatting away there. And of course, Dancing with the Stars has danced his way into studio this Friday afternoon literally. To be with us.
Pull two hamstrings, but I'm here.
Good to see you. How are you
Thank
keeping?
Thank you so much for having me in. I really, really, really appreciate it. So much.
Oh, listen, not at all. How's it all going?
All going really well. As you said, a brand new dance theatre show. I think we're 16 days away from obviously the premiere performance. So it's all very exciting. I'm all a little nervous, but all great.
And you have, so that's on November 20th.
Yes.
You have an even more important show taking place before that. Do you, a personal one?
2 days after.
Oh, two days after. Is, yeah. Okay. Because I was like, so yeah, tell
us. It's a busy month. I'm officially getting married on the 23rd of November.
Okay.
So our big day, myself and Michaela, our big day is like next July in Mallorca, but we obviously have to do the signing of the papers and stuff beforehand.
So you're doing your civil ceremony here. And so that's taking place 2 days before the...
After.
2 days after.
Yeah. So hopefully I make it through the blonde bombshell and then it's straight on suited and booted. And also with the registry.
What a way to celebrate the finish of the show though. I mean,
it's brilliant. And also it's getting ready for the Panto season, but also that's where we met and stuff. So it's a lovely time of year, the Christmas lights and everything, and all it's literally going to be friends and family around.
Brilliant.
Okay, it started off real small. Like it was going to be literally signing the paper for 5 minutes.
Just
and Kayla was
you.
Like, well, we have to stay in hotels. Like, then it's the dinner and then it's the drinks. And then it's, so now all of a sudden it's this big thing.
Now you're having two giant weddings.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us about the blonde bombshell. Yes. How did it come about?
So how it came about was Ian Banham, who's the co-choreographer of Dancing with the Stars for the last 5 years, an absolute genius. And he does all the pro numbers. He came up and with a concept and choreographed a number for Laura Nolan, who is our lead. She's
Marilyn.
She is Marilyn. And she's...
No, better Marilyn.
I tell you, she's absolutely phenomenal. It was made for her, you know. So Ian came up with this concept and they performed it live on Dancing with the Stars as one of the pro numbers, herself and John Nolan. And he saw it and he said, this could be something bigger. There's definitely something in this. And everyone, whatever, when the wig came on and the dress was there, everyone just identified Marilyn Monroe and they wanted to know more. So he came to me and he says, how can we make a 3-minute routine into a 2-hour show? And I said, I've no idea. And then I was like, actually, hold on, there's something in this, and we've been working on it for the last 6-7 months.
So the show, there's no dialogue in it. It's her story all told through dance.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
And that's the kind of the interesting side of it, because people say, but how will we know when you see dance happening, like a ballet, or sometimes you don't know what's happening, but there's emotions that when people are really, really dancing, it shows it. It connects to it in different ways that people, like, look, you could turn around and say, Marilyn, if it was an acting piece, I had 3 husbands, you know, Joe DiMaggio and Arthur Miller. But it gives it all away. But with the dance, you know, you can see with the rumba, every time that she has an emotional breakdown, the dances are slower. And when she's in a height of her frame, it's Broadway, it's tap, it's... You know, it's salsa.
Okay, so each genre of dance essentially reflects a time in her life.
Yes,
okay.
And her emotions and her feelings. And the songs also relate to that. So it's songs that people would know. And even like Candle in the Wind, Elton John, it was written about Norma Jean, Goodbye Norma Jean. So that would be coming to the end of the show and that was at the end of her life. So it's we're trying to strategically place them to tell a story without the audience going,
okay,
What's going on?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Like it. And is it a big cast?
Yes, so there's 10 professional dancers, 4 from Dancing with the Stars, and then the remaining 6 are all from Ireland and the UK. So all the best at what they do. And I think that's also, with the last 2 years, getting a new show out with something new and fresh, it's given dancers the chance to show what they can do.
Yeah, and I was also saying, because recently Marilyn hasn't had the greatest, like there was the Blonde, which was the Netflix film, again, kind of got painted her in a negative light and wasn't really I suppose, based on the truth, a lot of it, purposely.
Yep.
And then, of course, Kim Kardashian wearing the dress, that got a lot of negative criticism as well.
100%. And I think when you're saying with the blonde, like it was a fictional book, so a lot of the stuff, as you said, wasn't true. And even there was the Marilyn tapes, which was on Netflix earlier on in the year. Yeah. It's just a lot of like the low moments in her life.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
A lot of like.
Did you watch Blonde on Netflix? You
didn't? No.
Okay, yeah, no,
I
haven't
seen
it
yet. Purposely was like,
don't go there.
Yeah, just don't go there yet, because sometimes you might go, oh, is that what people want to see? The despair, you know, the tears. But it's not, you know, she was an absolute icon. She was, everyone loved her for her personality. She was, you know, so that's what we're going to try and show is the highs, but also some of the lows, but in a nicer way.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's take a little clip from her, because Some Like It Hot, and this song, I Want to Be Loved By You, that features in the show as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear her in action.
I want to be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be loved by you. Diddly 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 dum, boop boopy doop.
I mean,
brilliant.
So good.
It's so good.
So
and
good.
Where we have that in the show is I Want to Be Loved By You. We actually have that place that she's kind of singing it to her third husband, Arthur Miller. So it's like we're thinking about every way, and people go, oh, I know that song. And then it's like, well, how do we tie that in to a story? Then you bring her third husband in, Arthur Miller, and then you show their... Yeah,
and were you a fan of Marilyn, or did you go on that journey to like uncover and learn? And
I went on the journey.
Yeah,
I didn't like. I knew probably White Dress, JFK.
Yeah.
You know, one or two other things like that was it. And I thought I knew. And then the second I got into it, you know, from Joe DiMaggio, from her highs, her lows, all the stuff that she went through as a Norma Jean Baker, changing her name, an orphan, how she was left. You know, there was a lot of stuff Oh my God, this is. A lot of people don't know it. So that's, I'm kind of, as directing it, I love stories. I love like what Disney do, Walt Disney, what they do. It's like telling a story to young kids. That's what I love, like with Panto's Nanny shows. And that's what we're going to try and do, but just on a different scale.
Very good. Okay. I have to talk to you about Ultimate Hell Week because it's just finished the new series. You did it last year.
You'd be great on it.
Do you know what? I would love to do it. I absolutely would love to. And they asked me to do it the first series, but I was, I think I would manage most things except, well, I'd have to get fit again, but also the cold.
Oh, yeah.
When I see you all standing there shivering.
Yeah.
I mean, throw me out of a plane and starve me and don't let me sleep. I think I'd be okay with all that, but like,
that's just a normal week in RTE. Like, in real, yeah.
I just don't think I could stand the cold. But like, what was it like for you? I mean, you finished it.
Yes.
How was it for the mind? I mean, was it more mental than physical for you?
It was extremely tough, and there was a part of going into it. Like, they said straight away, yes or no. That was the email at the bottom. And I said yes straight away. And it was the only thing that I've ever gone into that, say for Dance with the Stars or some other shows, you go, it's not going to be that hard. But I knew this was going to be tough. And it was really, really weird. I had 5 weeks to train, and I trained specifically for the show. So I put everything into it. You know, cold showers every day because I knew it was going to be cold. You know, no gym. I just went with body weight. So I really, really went kind of nearly like an Olympian, head spaced, visualized
for
the whole thing.
Weeks.
5 weeks, which isn't a long time.
Yeah.
So I said, I need to have a lot more behind me. And that was the mind, mentality of it. But when you go in and then they throw you into the sea and then they throw you over a helicopter and they scream at you and then they strip you down and they leave you standing for 40 minutes that the cameras don't even see.
Yeah.
That all goes out the window and it's just survival mode then.
You see, I love the show because myself and the hubby watch it in the bed, right? And I'm watching it from the production perspective because I know a lot of the lads who'd be filming and the cameras and the drones and how they're getting the shot. And he's in the bed beside me, right? Going every 5 minutes going, I could do that. I could do that.
Yeah.
Like, this is a piece cake. And I have to listen to it for every 5 minutes the show goes on. Oh. And it's, I'd say every fella in the country is going, I could do it. But it's very different.
Oh my God. Like, do you know what? Being shouted
He's
at.
He's got to kill me now.
Like, I could do that. That's what some of the people having their curries, their spice back. We could do that. But I think it's when you get even shouted at.
Yeah.
Like, that's, it's an unknown term. And I trained, and the one thing I didn't train for was fighting. And we had to fight on it, and I broke two ribs.
Yes.
I got punched, and first punch, literally, my rib opened up, like, and I literally was like, oh my God. So
Did you keep going? I mean, I don't even know, but I want to quickly, because we're running out of time, but you did Everest last year.
Yes.
Based on that experience,
absolutely.
As in that it said, you know what, if I can do that, what else can I do?
I can do absolutely anything. And also we did a hike on Hell Week, which is the Foreman Aftman. It's a 26 kilometre, 50 kg on your back. And I did that and I said, you know what? I want something more. And also I think it's really good to challenge yourself. I think it's really good to have goals. I think it's really good to set things. I didn't have anything planned. It was April this year. And I said, you know what? I'm going to plan 3 months' time. And it puts you in a completely different, like, you're more focused, you're more driven with life. So that's another thing that I said, having goals.
How amazing to have had that opportunity present itself to you and for you to do it. And then, it, you know, it gets you into that frame of mind where confidence is built and you go, right, what else is out there for me? What else can I do?
And self-confidence.
Yeah.
I think I actually haven't, because that was a part of the reason why I went into Hell Week, was like, I was at a stage going, what do I have? Who am I? What else do I need to do to prove it to myself that I can do these things? And I don't know really what it was, but the Hell Week kind of gave that to me of going, do you know what? Anything you do, set your mind to 100% and try your best.
So your missus to be, Michaela,
yes,
now that she's got this action, man, you're climbing Everest. What else is next? Kilimanjaro, well, I know, is on the list as well.
Well, she doesn't know that, but thanks, Catherine.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but it was meant to be after the wedding. Well, look, it is after the wedding. So I said, look, I'm doing Kilimanjaro. And she's like, okay, 2024, just get me down the aisle, get me the ring, the dress, and then you can do whatever you
want. That's the biggest adventure you're ever going to have, by the way.
A wedding is worse than Hell Week.
I mean a wedding, not climbing Kilimanjaro. So that's next. Killy is on the list.
Yeah, I think it's when I went to Everest Base Camp, it's a different life. It's a different world. You're more appreciative. It's seeing new things. And you realise so much is on your doorstep if you just actually go, do you know what? I'm actually going to do that. I know you did Kilimanjaro. So like, it's, you know what you get from these things.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It changes you.
Yeah. Listen, lovely to chat to you and best of luck with the show. As I said, it is on in the Helix. It's called The Blonde Bombshell. And that is Sunday, November 20th. And as I said, the biggest adventure coming up for you. So
thank you so much.
Enjoy it and good luck.
Thanks, Catherine.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Ray is back on Monday and Drive Time is next with Sarah and Damon. Have a lovely weekend.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.